I'm Arun Vanigopal, in for Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. As protests against police brutality spread across the U.S. this summer, major fashion brands and companies expressed solidarity with Black Lives Matter through black squares on social media posts, public statements, and commitments to, quote, do better. Some brands, like Japanese retailer Uniqlo and Nike, pledged to donate $100,000 to organizations that support Black Lives Matter. Others, like Gucci, which has its own history with racism, published a letter stating its commitment to, quote, fight to end systematic racism, bigotry, police violence, and oppression. As Fashion Month begins, physically and virtually around the world, and here in New York City next week, the spotlight is off the runway and onto the business side of the industry. But can these gestures translate into real structural changes across the fashion world? For more on this, we turn to Robin Givhan, Washington Post fashion critic, and fashion designer Tracy Reese, who is the founder and creative director of Hope for Flowers. Robin, Tracy, so glad to have you with us.
Hi, thanks
Great
for having
me.
Robin, before we get into structural changes, please help catch us up on fashion weeks, which are going on all this month. What does it look like this year?
Well, it looks a lot like a lot of people around the world sitting in front of a computer watching live streams and videos and Zoom news conferences. It's quite virtual. I think there will be some live events actually, or at least are planned for this season. But essentially, it's, I think, a really big moment of reset for a fashion industry that, like so many businesses, is in upheaval.
Yeah. How would you characterize overall the response of the industry to what has happened this summer?
I think it's been a pretty fast buildup, actually. You know, it started out with a lot of companies and individuals posting notes of solidarity on social media, and it very quickly ramped up, in part because it seemed that a lot of people within the industry, a lot of black people within the industry, had quite simply just sort of lost patience with mm-hmm. notes of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And there were demands for actual changes that could be measured, from getting more products from black-owned companies on store shelves to opening the doors to more black photographers to shoot cover stories, to changes in boardrooms and in the design ateliers themselves.
Tracy, do you worry that this is just another trend, at least for some brands?
You know, there's every chance that that could happen. And I think, you know, it's up to us as black people in this industry to make sure that it isn't a passing trend or a phase. We have to do the work. We have to make sure our voices are heard. We have to keep the pressure on. We have to hold brands and all these organizations accountable and make sure they follow through with all the pledges that have been made and take it even further.
One would think that the extent to which change is possible depends on the number of people who are black in a given organization or in the industry overall. Robin, has that changed enough that you think there is critical mass?
Well, yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, there's been a lot of attention paid to the models that are on the runway, that are in advertising campaigns, in part because they are the most visible part of the industry for so many people. And over the last few years, that has changed dramatically. It's now, when you go look at a runway show or you look at an advertising campaign, the company that doesn't have diversity in those images is sort of the odd company out. That said, you know, Gucci had a significant problem with a sweater that had gave the appearance of someone wearing blackface. And that sweater caused a stir on social media, and it was the impetus for Gucci taking a really long, hard look at its corporate culture. And part of the reason for that is because Gucci has a very diverse workforce in the U.S., something like close to 15% of its workforce in the U.S. is black. And, you know, and that reflects the population in the U.S. And yet, despite having a diverse workforce, that sweater went from design concept to product on store shelves without anyone speaking up and even suggesting that it was problematic, which left both the president of Gucci and the chairman of its corporate parent saying, why didn't anyone speak up? Why didn't people feel that, one, if they did speak up, they would be heard, or two, that they could even step out and say something?
And this episode kind of makes me think that this idea of reflection, introspection, and having transparency in terms of how huge corporation actually operates, that this is all kind of contrary to the nature of fashion, which is built around a certain kind of mystique and a particularly crafted image. Is it especially hard for companies like this to do the necessary work?
I think that's a nice out for the fashion industry in some ways. Yes, there is this element of, each designer sort of having this vision of who the person is that they're dressing. And certainly as you get higher and higher and higher on the fashion pyramid to ever more exclusive brands, the audience narrows simply by nature of the financial wealth that's required to indulge in those brands. But fashion is also, it operates in the real world. And it is sensitive to and touched by all the same issues that affect every other industry. And so the idea that it would be either immune or be able to rise above, I think, is something that the industry has cultivated, but clearly isn't really true.
Tracy, give us some insight into how you've navigated the industry over the course of your career.
That's a good question. You know, and as all this has been unfolding these last few months, I've thought about it a lot. And, you know, there are certainly some huge generational changes that, you know, we're seeing. And, you know, I've said this a few times, you know, my generation was the first generation to go to college with a full ride. Mm-hmm. And, you know, among our families and friends, you know, it was a big deal. And we had a choice of where we wanted to go. And all of our parents worked their way through college, you know, and scrimped and saved and somehow made it through. But they were able to send their children, you know, to the colleges of their choices. And it was a huge deal. And it was a big responsibility, you know, for each of us who got that opportunity to find a way to be successful and to make great use of it. And so our generation was all about, you know, figure it out, find a way to succeed if you have to work around the system because the system is not welcoming to you, then find another way. You know, if a door closes, a window opens, but bear down, work hard, and find a way. And that's the story of my career where, you know, a lot of times people ask me, did you experience racism? And it's like, of course I did, but I did not have time for it. I didn't have time to stop and feel bad about it or complain about it. I don't think my complaints would have been heard or appreciated. It didn't matter. It was just like, find another way to make your dreams come true. And that was the story of my generation and the story of my career. Of course, there were roadblocks and barriers, but I pushed through, and it was really about the work and working hard and showing up and you know, finding a way to be accepted, getting your foot in the door any way that you could, even if, you know, you didn't feel welcome. And times are so different now, and I'm glad of it. You know, today's generation, that's not good enough. It's not good enough just to get your foot in the door. If the establishment doesn't welcome you, then create your own establishment. You know, it's a very different time, a different industry. I think the feeling among young creatives is completely different, and I'm energized by that.
Now, you're on the board of one of the biggest organizations in fashion, Tracy, the Council of Fashion Designers of America. How have they been thinking about this moment?
It's been huge at CFDA, and, you know, CFDA has been called out from every direction because, you know, it's a symbol of, you know, the fashion establishment, especially in this country. And, you know, there are plenty of people at CFDA who would, and I'm not saying, you know, necessarily organizationally, but membership-wise, too, who would love, you know, to keep the status quo because it's worked to their advantage. But, you know, CFDA is recognized, you know, as the governing body for fashion in the U.S. And so it has to break that kind of chain of racism that, you know, many people feel is prevalent within the organization and the industry. And, you know, CFDA has to assert its leadership on this as it does in many other roles in the industry. So, you know, we're really bearing down and working hard and trying to attack this from every level and also, you know, work on it in partnership with a lot of the organizations that have been formed these last few months, including Black in Fashion.
Now, we've been talking about how models on runways are the most visible sign of change or lack of change. But behind the scenes often has to do with access to investors or industry resources. Is it too soon to say whether that is changing, Tracy?
It is too soon. And I think that that's obviously the biggest hurdle. You know, when we talk about wealth and we talk about, you know, having a stake, you know, in the foundation of this industry, Black people don't have the stake that white people do, or even Asians, because Asians are very much involved in manufacturing and, you know, and also design, and they have a different stake in this industry, and we don't have a financial stake in this industry. So we're relying on financing from the white establishment, you know, to fund our businesses, or we have to find a way to self-fund, which means we're going to be starting much more slowly with a lot less capital. And it's a long road. When we speak to young Black designers, I help mentor a group of young Black designers at CFDA, and capital is the biggest challenge. Most of them are working full-time jobs and trying to, you know, run their own businesses on their own at night, and they have their own direct-to-consumer channels, and, you know, they're doing double duty trying to launch their brands or maintain their brands, and it's super challenging. And of course, in this climate, ready money, ready capital is not really available. And to be honest, walking into a bank or a factor as a Black creative is not an easy thing to do. You know, they're not looking at you the same as they would a white man or, you know, someone who has, you know, their family wealth or connections. So it's very lonely, you know, trying to launch a brand with very little capital. It's very challenging.
Robin, given all that is happening in the world, why do you think this matters?
Well, it matters because, one, the fashion industry is an enormous global business that we all participate in. And it matters because fashion is also a business that very directly shapes our ideas about who people are. It helps shape who we believe ourselves to be and how we want other people to perceive us. And it also is, you know, it's an industry that really is about creativity and about innovation and entrepreneurship. It remains one of the few industries where, you know, despite all of the hurdles, financial and otherwise, it's still accessible for someone with as cliche as it might sound, with an idea and a dream to actually, you know, make something of it. And I think just sort of fundamentally, it is an industry that, you know, continues to be alive and well in the U.S. And particularly for smaller designers, a lot of the manufacturing that they do happens in the U.S. And so as much as, you know, we talk about the importance of, you know, made in America and supporting American industry, this is an American industry that would be better the more open and supportive it was of designers and creative folks of all colors.
Robin Givhan is the Washington Post fashion critic, and Tracy Reese is a fashion designer and founder and creative director of Hope for Flowers. Robin, Tracy, thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Arun. Thank you.